bold, it's informative. Welcome to Truth Talk with Myron.
Welcome to Truth Talk today. With us today, we have with us Mr. William Hawk from the Darlan Moore School of Business. Mr. Hawk is an assistant professor in economics, and he is a graduate of Stanford University there in California. We also have with us Mr. Garrett Sheldon, who is the John Morton Beatty Professor of Politics at the University of Virginia College at Wise. He is also an ordained minister, and he is an author of 10 books on politics and religion. He'll be joining us later in the hour. Mr. Hawk, thank you for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yes, sir. For people who are not familiar with your work, sir, kind of give us a little bit more detailed information about what you do, sir.
Well, I'm an economics professor at the University of South Carolina. My interests primarily range in international trade policy, and I also teach courses in intermediate macroeconomics. So kind of looking at the big picture in the U.S. economy, both domestically and how it relates to the broader world economy.
Okay. Very good. We wanted to talk a little bit today about going into detail about systematic politics. And first, let's talk about the economy issue. And the first thing about the economy that we want to discuss, with the current economy being the way that it is, I wanted to ask you, in this current U.S. economy, is the business services climate deteriorating?
Well, it depends a little bit on what sector you're in. Some economic sectors are doing reasonably well, others not quite as much. And the ones that have been hit the most by the recession have obviously been, you know, the construction sector. That just absolutely got devastated the last few years. It's starting to come back, but, you know, that's definitely where a lot of the damage was done. Also, you know, where there have been bright spots in the economy, mining actually has been a very good sector in terms of employment growth the last few years. Some of the natural gas boom and stuff going on, that has been a plus for the economy. But, you know, most of it has been negative the last few years. It's slowly coming back, but, you know, very slowly.
Okay. Well, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong about this, but, you know, according to certain business leaders, I think they were questioned last month, the industrial economic situation, they say, is deteriorated in that industry. I mean, I guess a synthetic indicator, it says that it's steady, but it's below the long-term average. Is that right?
That's probably about right, yes. I think manufacturing in the United States has generally taken a bit of a downturn in the last decade or so. It's been one of the weaker areas of the economy in general. It's maybe, you know, not quite as bad now as it was maybe a couple years ago, but really I think the long-term trends for manufacturing in the U.S. have been generally negative, mainly through competition from overseas has been hurting people a lot, domestic manufacturers. And then also, even domestic manufacturers that are doing well have been able to find ways to do it while hiring less people through automation and computer technology and the like. So employment in the manufacturing sector has been really, really weak for a long time now.
Okay. And you, I believe you gave the reasons is because of competition, because of overseas competition and such. What about
overseas competition is a big part of the reason, yes.
Okay, so to be clear, let's look at it this way. Are current United States economic indicators for 2013, are they favorable or unfavorable?
Well, I think they're looking mildly favorable, but there's a lot of potential things in there that could hurt the economy. I think right now The political situation is causing a lot of economic uncertainty through the budget sequestration process and the sort of protracted mm-hmm. budget negotiations that keep going on, and really the inability of the federal government to seemingly to come up with a permanent budget solution. And that, I think, is the biggest thing holding the economy back at the moment. I think we could be doing much better if some of the problems in Washington were to able to work themselves out.
Okay, elaborate on it a little bit. Give us a little bit of example. You know, like what things need to be worked out exactly? I mean, is it, you know, because a while back we had Senator Michael Brown on, and he agreed with the president as far as his sequestering, I guess you could say, policy, the things that he offered up and put on the table against, I guess, what the Republicans had offered. Who's right and who's wrong? Are they both wrong, or is it more, is this administration making things more difficult that's actually hurting the economy?
Well, I think there's a lot of blame to go around on this one. There seems to be an inability to come up with any sort of permanent compromise. I mean, there are some long-term fiscal issues that will have to be addressed in the United States. But even right now, just in terms of can we make a budget that will last for the next year or so, where we don't have these periodic debates where we have to worry about our automatic tax hikes or spending cuts, are they going to kick in because we can't come up with a budget agreement? Are we going to have to come up with drastic cuts because suddenly we've suddenly hit our debt ceiling? Are we going to have to, are we just not going to have a budget at all when, you know, the next sort of these continuing resolutions that keep getting passed? They seem to run from sort of one fiscal crisis to another, and I think the lack of certainty that comes from, you know, just having a budget that everybody can agree on the table is really, I think, causing a lot of uncertainty out there and harming the economic recovery.
Okay, okay. In your expertise, what needs to be done to keep it going? Because you brought up the fact, you know, of the manufacturing industry and other industries like mining and such mm-hmm. that are doing okay but not great. And some yeah. industries are struggling, which means unemployment. The senator made a statement saying that the unemployment was growing overall. However, by certain numbers that we looked at, they weren't growing. You know what I mean? It's misleading information, if you will. So unemployment is still high. And part of that
yes.
is because of the economy, correct?
Yes, no, certainly. Unemployment numbers, the jobs report that came out this week was fairly disappointing. The economy added, the official number was the economy added 88,000 jobs in March, which isn't terrible, but really given the amount of jobs that we lost during, say, 2009, 2010,
mm-hmm.
really, we need to be adding a whole lot more than that. So the official unemployment rate right now is 7.6%, which mm-hmm. is actually as low as it's been in a couple years now. But there's a big but that we have to add on to that. Unemployment only measures people who are officially looking for jobs. If there
right.
are people who've been out of the if they've been out of work for a while and they drop out of the labor force because they stop looking for jobs, well, they don't get mm-hmm. counted in the unemployment numbers. So mm-hmm. what we're seeing is that there are a whole lot of people who've been out of work and they really just kind of stop looking for work, which mm-hmm. technically the way that the unemployment rate is counted, that means they're no longer unemployed. But it's not necessarily a great thing for those workers. And so right now, the U.S. labor force participation rate, that's basically the measure of who is actively out there either working or actively looking for a job as a fraction of the adult population. That's been as low as it's been. It's as low as it has been now since the 1970s, and that's not a good number.
Okay. Okay. In your expertise, what do we need to do to, I mean, what plan do you think would work to fix, to turn this thing around, because it's gone mm-hmm. on for far too long? So, I mean, as an economist,
yeah.
in your opinion, what does this administration need to do to get the job done?
Well, I think what the administration and Congress need to do, I think the immediate thing that they need to do is really come up with a long-term budget. Right now, I think the biggest thing that the government is doing that is hurting the economy is creating more uncertainty than there needs to be out there. They need to get together, come up with a compromise long-term budget. What combination of spending cuts or tax changes you want to do in order to pull that off, there needs to be a little bit of flexibility on both ends, I think. That's the immediate thing. The longer-term thing I think that we need to look at is how do we reduce hiring costs for businesses. We're seeing, businesses expand in some areas, but right now they're really, really hesitant to hire new workers. And so that is hurting, that's not helping get the unemployment rate down. Even as businesses expand, if they don't hire more workers, we're not going to see lower unemployment rates. And that's the economy's biggest weak point right now. So I think what we need to do is think creatively about how we can reduce hiring costs for businesses. So as they grow, they want to hire more workers.
Okay. You said that they're not hiring workers, or people are not hiring. Is that because of Obamacare? Isn't that a
huge... That may be part of it. I mean, there is some evidence right now that... health premiums for that, businesses who pay for their employees' health care, their health care costs are going up. And that's maybe partially Obamacare. I think it's just a long-run trend right now in health care expenses that they keep getting higher and higher. So that's part of it. Yeah, I think we need to figure out how do we reduce the burden for businesses who are facing, increased costs for health care for their employees. That's, I think, a long-term plan. We need to think about how we can get that burden off of businesses back so they don't have to worry about that major cost of hiring workers.
Okay. And the one question I really wanted to get to, right, with this current economic climate, who's benefiting from the way things are now?
Well, I don't know that there's necessarily a whole lot of people benefiting right now. The stock market's doing pretty well, so there are, some firms out there who are becoming profitable. I mean, you're seeing, technology sector is doing reasonably well. Natural resources companies, oil, mining, so forth, they're doing pretty well. I don't know necessarily that's part of any sort of conscious plan. That's just the sort of where the strengths of the economy are at the moment. But I think they're the sectors of the economy that seem to be doing pretty well at the present time.
Okay. Well, we certainly thank you for your time and your input. That information was very good. I appreciate you taking the time to share your input with us today. And if anybody has any questions, do you have any economic books that you've written or a website where someone can get in contact with you, sir?
Well, I don't have any books that I've personally written that I can direct you to, but we do at Moore School of South Carolina. It's www.moore.sc.edu, and we have various economic information on there.
All right. Well, thank you, sir. You have a good weekend. Enjoy the rest of it. And we'll be right back after break.
Patrick's Uniforms and Patrick's Indoor Gun Range are basically two businesses in one. Patrick's Uniforms is your clothing supplier for everything from public safety officers to doctors to chefs. And whatever school uniform you need, it's at Patrick's too. Even engraving, embroidery, and any type of custom work you might need. Now, Patrick's Indoor Gun Range is Savannah's premier indoor gun range. Patrick's offers the novice and the expert a chance to shoot on a safe, clean, professional range. There are 10 lanes, so you won't be waiting in line. And if you'd like to bring your friends or family to enjoy the experience, there's a spectator area set aside with a glass wall, tables, chairs, so they can watch you shoot. Patrick's Gun Range can accommodate any pistols, even 50 cals. Buy your next weapon at Patrick's 2. Patrick's offers the highest quality firearms. Glock, Kimber, Sig Sauer, just to name a few. Patrick's even offers firearms training courses. Patrick's is Savannah's premier indoor gun range on Highway 80 in Garden City. Online at patricksuniforms.com. Patricksuniforms.com.
Welcome back to Truth Talk. Right now, what we're going to do is I'm going to take a minute, and I'm going to introduce you guys to Mr. Ray Stedman, the late Ray Stedman, who has some very empowering words and messages in his sermons. I think it's important for us to understand what he was taught, what he has to say to us today as it relates to the world at large. It's kind of deviating a little bit from our topic today, but it kind of goes along with in our series of the family crisis. And what Mr. Stedman shares with us is a very empowering message, and I wanted to share that with you today. So if you will, just take a moment and just pay close attention to what he has to say.
Our subject is sex. Would it be an exaggeration for me to say that this is undoubtedly the most popular theme in the world? As you know, sex is used today to sell everything, from prunes to motor cars, from aardvarks to zweibach. I saw recently an advertisement for overshoes, and what could be more prosaic than overshoes? And the ad started with the great letters an inch or so high spread across the top of it, S-E-X. And down underneath in fine print it said, "Now that I have your attention, I'd like to tell you about the overshoes that we sell." And if we need any further proof for the popularity of this subject, just this week, someone saw the subject advertised on the bulletin board outside the church, and they said, "Wow, you're going to have a full church next Sunday." And they were right. Already there have been, I must report, some raised eyebrows at the idea that a subject like this would be discussed and serve as the basis of a sermon from a Christian pulpit. But as announced last Sunday, we are now in a series on the Christian and moral conditions. And how can you preach a series on the Christian and moral conditions without coming to grips with the subject of sex? And why should we avoid this subject? I make no apology for this message this morning because, in the first place, it's only one of several I intend to preach on this general subject. And I do want, however, to make one thing very crystal clear. This message this morning, and none of the messages that I will be bringing on this subject, will be approached from a negative point of view. I think no one is more aware than I am of the lopsided sensuality of our day, of the grotesque overemphasis that on sex that exists today. But I do not think this calls for scathing denunciation, for fire and brimstone from the pulpit. We've had plenty of that. I read recently a very insightful thing, I felt. Speaking on another subject, the writer said, "The hunger of the world's people today is for affirmations. Everywhere, people are asking, can't you do something more intelligent than make loud noises against something? We know what you're against. Please tell us what you are for." And perhaps one of the reasons for the terrible ignorance on this matter of sex today is because the church, by and large, has not taken the time to say what the Scripture has to say about this, but has contented itself with denunciations against the abuses of sex. Now, negativism never helps very much. There's a place for it. But there is nothing much accomplished until there's a positive declaration. And this is what we intend to do this morning on this subject of sex. The Bible is full of sexual themes. Anyone who has read it through knows this. And this is perfectly understandable because the Bible is the book about life. It's the book that goes with human beings.
And welcome to the show. We interrupted that message because I wanted to take a moment to get back on point and touch base with Mr. Garrett Sheldon, again, who is the John Morton Beatty Professor of Politics at the University of Virginia College at Wise, again, who is an ordained minister, and he is the author of 10 books on religion and politics. Mr. Sheldon, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Myron. It's good to be here.
Yes, sir. Talk to us a little bit more about your ministry, sir.
Well, I am a senior pastor of a Baptist church here in Virginia. I am the author of the Christian novel, What Would Jesus Do? And so while I'm a professor, I was beginning to be asked to preach at different churches, and eventually a Baptist church asked me to be their pastor. So I'm what they call a bivocational minister. I have a full-time job at the college at the University of Virginia, and then I'm sort of part-time at the church.
Okay. Okay. And today we were talking about systematic politics, and you heard, we just briefly finished talking to Mr. William Hawk about the economy and who was benefiting in particular, though there's no respective person or industry to that cause, you know, it's very interesting. So I'll just pick up with you here, and I wanted to discuss briefly the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. Under the Obama administration, I wanted to ask you, who has benefited from that office under his administration? I don't think a lot of people are aware of what they do and how they operate. Can you kind of explain that a little bit, sir?
Yeah, the Office of Faith-Based Initiatives primarily provides federal assistance to religious organizations that are doing various kinds of social work, and including in our area, we have a sort of a nursing home or rest home that is funded through that. And there are alcohol recovery programs, drug programs. Unfortunately, during the first term of Obama's administration, with his controversy with the churches over Obamacare and the conflict with the Catholic Church over their objection to having to support contraception and abortion, which is to them a mortal sin, relations between the federal government and churches has really deteriorated. Now, we're hoping with the new appointment of Ms. Rogers that there will be some, new bridges made.
Okay. You brought up Ms. Rogers. She's a scholar of church and state legal issues, but what do you think her agenda is, since she was appointed? I mean, do you think it's...
Yeah, I don't know her, even though she went to Baylor. She is a Southern Baptist, as I am. It's hard to say. I'm concerned that she agrees with President Obama that organizations receiving federal aid cannot take religion into account in their hiring, which President Bush was very lenient on that. If it was a Catholic organization, they could just hire people in that church and so on. Now, if you receive federal aid for a faith-based program, you cannot restrict it to people in your faith. And, of course, that could be a kind of, open door to gays, because that's often the restriction made in the religious organizations, that people abide by their faith teachings on on marriage. So I'm a little concerned about Ms. Rogers in that area. On the other hand, she has indicated a moderating on the Obamacare issue, and forcing the Catholic Church organizations to support contraception and abortion. I think she may be able to mend some fences in that area between the administration and the Catholic Church. There's really no reason to impose this very offensive doctrine, very offensive policy on the Church, that they actually support a policy that is contrary to their moral teachings. They've always had exemptions in that area. So I'm hoping that she will bring some reconciliation, just as President Obama has reached out to Israel. And I think the American Jewish community is pleased that he is now, you know, more positive towards Israel.
Mm-hmm. But do you, some of our associates have said, you know, from different schools, different universities and ministry have said, and it's a proven fact that this administration has been the most unfriendly towards the Christian religion. Do you agree with that?
Mm-hmm. I do agree with that. Unfortunately, there seems to have been a hostility towards particularly Catholics and conservative evangelicals. And the Obamacare issue is a good one because it shows how, you know, the sort of radical feminist agenda on birth control was imposed on, you know, conservative churches and their opposition to abortion. And the same with the Jewish issue. The sense was that he wasn't in support of Israel because he was more influenced by the Palestinians. And so I think, you know, we're hoping for some change in that direction. But you're right, Meyer, and the feeling in the church is that this administration has been at best dismissive, at worst hostile towards Christians.
Right. Okay. Now, when we journey into this, you know, when we get into this topic, let's, you know, kind of really dive into it there a little bit, because I think there's a lot more underneath it all when you think about it. For example, you brought up the Obamacare, but what about their position on same-sex marriage?
All right, another one that, you know, contrary to 3,000 years of religious teaching in the West, and the Judeo-Christian tradition, as you know from the Bible, you know, God's law is that marriage is between a man and a woman. And so to reject that long-standing moral tradition is really very obnoxious to our religious heritage.
Right, right. My topic, you know, the way I wanted to approach this is I wanted to take a look at several topics, but it's like I call it a systematic politics. Well, when you look at the Obamacare issue and how that is affecting the church, and then you take a look at this same-sex issue, from this, you know, first of all, I don't know, I've heard different things from different colleagues, but what is the agenda, if you will? If you take a look and you really pay close attention to the language that these guys use when they're creating these policies, what is their agenda? You understand? You know, what is the policy?
Yeah.
To me, it's designed for one particular purpose. What do you think?
Well, in terms of Obamacare and economic policy in general, I think, you know, it's not really about health care. It's not
right.
About improving health care. It's not about helping the poor. It's about increasing the government. And the groups that are really benefiting from this are federal employees, federal offices, the federal bureaucracy that will regulate a much larger part of American life. And it's a classic example in history of a sort of imperial regime, imperial capital that just gradually takes over more and more of the economy and power, and basically, robs the country to support its own lavish lifestyle. And you saw that in the Roman Empire. You saw it in the Byzantine Empire, the Habsburg Empire, the British Empire. The capital city becomes more and more of a leech on the rest of the society and just builds more and more programs to fund them and their personnel and impoverish the general population.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. When you look at those, you see how the catastrophes that happened with those empires, but when you look at, I'm going to keep going back to this, when you look at the policy of the same-sex marriage, which it clearly goes against what Christians believe, and history and what the God's doctrine is. And this is just an opinion. I'm gonna just mm-hmm. put it out there like that. Who's benefiting from this policy? Because it's very interesting the way that they're maneuvering with it. But who's benefiting?
Yeah. In political science, we look at interest groups. And I'm not saying that this explains everything about the same-sex marriage, gender, gay lobby, mm-hmm. but. Interest groups are in terms of, groups that lobby to get policy and laws that benefit them economically. So, if you took that political right. science model, which I'm not saying it's true, I'm sure a lot of the people behind same-sex marriage really believe it's good. But, if you were to ask, Rush Limbaugh often says, follow the money trail. If you want to explain a policy, who's benefiting financially? If you looked at same-sex marriage, well, one group that would obviously benefit would be liberal churches, whose numbers mm-hmm. have been going down steadily. And, mm-hmm. The conservative churches are not going to do gay weddings, but the liberal churches will. So, they'll have much more business in terms of, gay marriage if it's legalized. Perhaps trial lawyers. The number of marriages generally has been going down in this country, and so... in absolute terms, the number of divorces. So, say, if, as a possibility, the divorce rate amongst gay married people was the same as straight people, which is about 50%, divorce lawyers would get more business. Again, I'm not suggesting that they would have such a crass
point.
motive for that, but, it is. If you ask about who's benefiting and who's hurting, this could be an economic motive. Some smart MBA somewhere figures out, well, how do you make more money in this or that profession or business? Well, we pass a law. It's very much like all the environmental law. You pass a law benefiting right. solar energy. Guess who makes more money? Solar energy companies. So you right, got to look right. at what is the economic effect of changing 3,000 years of moral and religious tradition in terms of marriage and family, and who might be benefiting. The only two I can think of just off the top of my head is the liberal churches doing gay weddings and divorce lawyers doing gay divorces.
right.
I'm not saying right. that's their motive, right. but, you asked right. what might be the winners and losers in this policy, and that is something to think about.
That it is, it's interesting, but it could be some truth in that. And last week I spoke to, but it's interesting because there was I spoke to Mr. Baskerville last week as we were closing on our series of the Family Crisis, and I asked, when you looked at the social pathologies and civic disarray, and just basic, the decline of traditional family. The point being, how has politics contributed? And as he stated, it's contributed wholeheartedly. But the media
right.
and other people do not talk about it because, as he say, if you look at the way, and this is going along with what you were saying, along the lines of what you were saying, he said, when you look at the way they're articulating policies and the way that the government is structuring things, it is basically undermining the traditional family. You know, right. And of course, there are a lot of benefactors to that, as you said, attorneys, lawyers, or whatever. You know, well, the traditional family may go to a divorce lawyer, hire a divorce lawyer, they get paid. Okay, we don't have to live this way. I can be with Sue and Ann and John and Jim or whatever, and mm-hmm. they'll go get a divorce, and then, you know, it's creating a whole new, I guess you could say, a whole new environment that creates a really unstable culture, as he put it. You know,
the cost is the culture, because, I mean, for us in the faith, believe that you're really only safe and healthy and happy when you're living within God's will. And God's right. will is clear in the Bible that mm-hmm. He has a purpose for marriage. He has a mm-hmm. purpose for families. His structure of devoted husbands and wives within the faith, raising children faithfully, that's all part of his divine law and natural law. That really, that's best for children. It's best for adults. And so you start tearing that down. You know, the ones who suffer the most, we see sociologically, are the poor and single mothers and children. This is, I think, the rise of drug abuse, suicide, teen suicide, tragic things. Is from losing that security of the family that God designed for our right. good. God gave us his law for our good because he loves us. When we deviate from that because of our sinful lusts, we end up hurting ourselves. It ends up, you know, the devil tempts us and says, well, try this pleasure, it'll make you happy. And it may make you happy, as St. Paul says, for a season. But then you suffer terrible, terrible pain and tragedy from it.
That's right. Well, let me get back to some issues here. That's true what you said, though, but a lot of people don't want to pay attention to that. They don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear the truth. But nonetheless...
Yeah, it's real simple. I think it's too simple for people. The simple faith is that it is best to live within God's will, mm-hmm. and it is wrong to live outside God's will. And if it's wrong, there will be consequences, and there will be painful, tragic, heartbreaking consequences. So all we say in the church is, you know, it's really best to seek God's will, to live within his law. You'll be happier in the long run. You'll be more secure. And you just, you know, you don't want to mess with that stuff.
Right, that's right. Getting back to something that you mentioned, like you said, on healthcare, you know, on healthcare, you know, the president, in my opinion, keeps offering more of the same. You know, it's not new initiatives, but he continues. It's the same old, you know, it's the same old ideology, but he continues to advocate for Medicare cuts. I think some of the proposals included some of the measures with some bipartisan support, but at the same time, they didn't mention any changes to Medicaid or cuts to new insurance subsidies, you know, in the Affordable Care Act. What do you think about that?
Well, it's, as I said before, I really think the beneficiaries of Obamacare are federal employees, are people who are administering Obamacare. It is not going to help the overall health care system. Especially for the poor and the elderly. In the end, it's not going to help insurance companies because as insurance becomes more expensive, we're already seeing people bail out and go into the pure government plan, which is, I think, the whole idea from the beginning, to have socialized medicine. And we see what socialized medicine is like in other countries. When I was in England, 10 years ago, there was a BBC show on the average wait in the emergency room of a British hospital to see a doctor was 12 hours. And, you know, we see the same thing with, you know, rationing operations and treatments, and it's really social agenda. And it's much better and much fairer to leave it up to individuals and families who may say, you know, I'm willing to spend more to keep grandma alive longer, And not leave it up to some death panel in the federal government. And also the innovation. You know, the market is best for promoting innovation. We have the most high-tech country in the world, and that includes medical technology. And when it becomes run by the government, we know that stifles innovation. And so, you know, there may be new discoveries in the pipeline to cure cancer or Alzheimer's, or which may be lost because we're over-regulating and bureaucratizing healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, when you speak on that, you know, I know that there was something that came up about reducing payments made to pharmaceutical companies for drugs prescribed for poor senior citizens. You know, these are things that I don't think people pay close attention to, and this is all under the administration. And in speaking to Mr. Hogg earlier in the show, we spoke about the economy and the budget. And, you know, the president's message, you know, I guess on the budget is, you know, is basically we shouldn't worry about the deficit, right? You know, nor should we try to cut spending too deeply. You know, he's called for, I think, additional $1.5 trillion in cuts, but it's not a sustainable budget, like Mr. Hawk was saying. The budget needs to be a long-term budget. You know, there's the administration has done a very poor job. And
yeah, I just don't get it. I mean, nobody understands how you could run an economy with this kind of borrowing and then printing money. Everyone knows it won't work. Look at Cyprus. Look at Greece.
Right.
Look at the EU.
Right.
I mean, this is we're just planning a disaster, and you know, some people think it is a planned disaster. It's a plan to break the economy, to bust this economy, and set up a purely state-run communist system.
That's my point. A while back, I can't remember exactly, but I had two economists on the show, and one spoke. They both defined it, and it was very good how they put it. One, when you look at economic growth and economic development. And so the thing that I hit most, like looking at the economy, again, as I was speaking to Mr. Hawk, the economy is not where it should be, and it needs to be fixed. But if you listen to liberals and you listen to this administration and so forth and Democrats, they'll say that we're recovering. But yet unemployment remains high, growth is sluggish, and the forecasts don't look all that great for the remainder of this year. There are certain industries that's doing well, certain industries that's not. But as I asked Mr. Hawk, who's benefiting from this, from the way things are? To me, it is. I believe they want it to be this way. Why? Because you look at Washington and the counties around Washington, which has the highest per capita income anywhere in the nation. So
right, they're doing fine up there.
Right, exactly. So couldn't it be fair to say that it is planned to keep it in disarray as it is because they're benefiting while everybody else is struggling? I mean, what do you think?
I think that is, yeah, that's sort of the most charitable view that, you know, they just want to keep their good jobs and benefits. And, you know, if you make real cuts, they're going to lose jobs and benefits in the federal government. But, I mean, really, a less charitable view would be that they're actually trying to destroy the economy. And when you see
But why? Why would you do that? Tell me, who would benefit from that?
Why? The reason you would do that is you grew up and went to Ivy League universities that taught you that Marxism is correct, that a state-run economy is the most just and prosperous, in spite of the fact it's never worked anywhere. I mean, the Soviet Union and China, I mean, they're just it installs the most tyrannical and impoverished system in the world. But, you know, if you grow up with this kind of liberal and socialist education, you think people in government are much smarter than average people. And if they control everything and run the economy, it will be much more fair and prosperous. Instead of leaving it to individuals to decide what they want to buy and, you know, how they work and so on, to have the centralized state and, you know, smart people in the government, elites in the government, running everything. I think they really believe it will be better if they run everything.
Right.
Well, no, I don't know that that's the agenda, because I think the short term is they're just trying to save their jobs, but they're killing the economy. I mean, I see it. You see it. Not just unemployment, but underemployment. It's heart-wrenching to see the students graduate from my college and not get jobs. In fields that are often, you know, we're guaranteed, I mean, just absolutely guaranteed, people in nursing, you know, or business, or computer science. I mean, the ones that you were sure, accounting, you know, you were sure you would get a good job, are not getting good jobs. They're juggling two and three part-time jobs.
Right.
The psychological effect of that on this generation, and then living off, you know, public assistance, I joked with a colleague of mine that, you know, we'll have to start a new, including a lot of conservatives who don't want to live on public, we could start a new group called LOPA, LOPA, Libertarians on Public Assistance. Because, I mean, get this, you know, these are people who believe in doing away with the government, and the only way they can live is to be on public assistance.
Right.
And they spend their time on their blogs trying to undo the government, but they have, you know, they have to receive the aid. So it really is tragic.
It is. And again, when, like you mentioned, you know, your students not being able to get jobs when they graduate. As Mr. Hawk pointed out earlier, you have corporations that are just simply not hiring, and they're not hiring because of the economy, because of this situation, which is, it's a trickle-down effect, if you will. But I wanted to ask you, when you see things what they are, with the way the state of things being the way they are in this country, you advised the White House during President George W. Bush administration, correct?
Right.
Okay. I want to ask you, what advice would you give this administration right now? As far as, I mean, seriously, what would you tell them right now?
I haven't been invited to, but I'd be glad, I'd be honored to be invited to go up to the White House again and advise the president. But, yeah, I would say get real. I mean, and actually, I think they're trying some ways. I mean, get real. I mean, get come down to reality here. There is a reality, and you're not in it. I mean, you're in this weird ideology that just doesn't fit and isn't working, and so it's undermining, as you pointed out, both the economy and the moral structure.
Right.
And you talk about a recipe for disaster. I mean, to undermine both the economy, the social system, and the moral structure, you're talking about, we're seeing trouble now that we've never seen in this country. I mean, just horrible crime, just social breakdown, discrimination, disintegration. And so what I would say, and I actually think, I'm not a conspiratorial thinker, Myron, but I actually sometimes have my moments, that they are getting the word. In fact, I think Obama got the word before the election. I think some prominent Democrats sat down with him and said, "Do you want to be president again?" And he said yes. I think that was the night he was crying in Iowa, because he basically, they said, okay, you know, like the Israel group, the American Jewish Democrats said, "You're going to lose 30% of the Jewish vote. How would you like to lose 70%? And the election?" I think the Catholic Democrats said, "You're going to lose some of the Catholic vote. How would you like to lose the Hispanic Catholic vote? We could do that." No matter what your immigrant. So I think they actually made a deal before the election. And after he was elected, Obama's going to patch things up with Israel and patch things up with the Catholic Church, and I hope with all the Christian churches. And he's going to start patching things up with business. I hope he is. Because the solution is to get back to more of a pro-business agenda and quit. I mean, this ad hominem attacks on people and calling bankers all fat cats and rich people are all, you know, lazy. And so, I mean, that is just disgraceful.
Well,
from the highest office in the land.
If you look at the banks, who controls most of the high-powered banks? Is in their common I mean, who controls them? Liberals, Democrats.
Right.
I mean, come on. I mean,
exactly. And this rhetoric, I mean, anybody knows who's been in politics. you do not do this in public. You do not insult your opponents in public. You might say a lot of things about them in private, but in
right.
public, you're diplomatic. It doesn't help you or anybody to do name calling of your opponents like that, to humiliate them in public. They will remember that.
Yeah.
They will wait till you need something from them, and they will get even. So everybody
True.
With experience knows you just don't do that.
Right, right. Well, you know,
so the advice I would give the Obama administration is get real.
Okay.
Get back to supporting the American economy and the American moral culture. Quit attacking freedom of religion and the church and mm-hmm. Israel. And, mm-hmm. you know, get back on a normal, even keel of America.
Right, right. I think Obama has a distorted view of America. I really do. I just think
I'm afraid he does. And it's an odd thing. You know, we'll study this for hundreds of years if we're still around. Again, I yeah. mentioned to you the other day, I think in 20 years we're going to look back at all this stuff and just can't believe it. We're not going to believe it, all
right.
this stuff, socialism and same-sex marriage. And all. I mean, we're going to look back at it the way we look back at the 30s and people getting on board with communism. I mean, it's embarrassing now. When we look back
yeah.
at the 60s and radical feminism, we're embarrassed. I mean, it didn't work out. Easy
right.
divorce. All this stuff that sounded so great, you know, when they floated it, we all know
right.
didn't work out. And I think we're going to look back in 20 years and say, this is ridiculous. How did anybody believe this stuff?
Well, you know, that unfortunately, that's the world we live in, you know. I mean, it's
yeah.
crazy. It really
yeah, and
is.
All we can do is speak the truth and ask, and I know you deal with controversial things and you get attacked.
Mm-hmm.
All we in the church and in the conservative movement ask is that we be shown the same tolerance that they're asking for to express our views.
Right.
That's all we're asking
right.
for, is the same tolerance to mm-hmm. say from our moral viewpoint,
mm-hmm.
this is wrong. And from our
right.
political viewpoint, the economy should be run this way. And not be called names and attacked.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is America. We're supposed to have freedom of speech, democracy,
right.
give
mm-hmm.
and take. And you can't do that if you're, you know, if you're dismissing your opponents with a lot of very incendiary name-calling.
Right, right. I wanted to, that's why, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but I was playing a segment earlier in the show from Mr. Ray Stedman. You ever heard of Ray Stedman?
Yes.
He was a profound preacher, and I wanted to play that segment because it dealt with moral issues as he was talking, going into the subject of sex and the way it should be. Because I know it's not a subject that the church preaches on a whole lot or teaches on, but my point, I wanted to play that segment because when you look at, a lot of people are allowing the government to dictate when you speak of moral issues, like with Obamacare and asking the church to do certain things that they know goes against the faith. I think it's important for people to hear the message that, you know, you live by God's doctrine, not by government doctrine. You know what I mean?
Exactly, and you can change all the laws you want, and you can make sin all legal the way you want, but it won't work. I mean, St. Thomas Aquinas said, human law has to conform to natural law and divine law, or it won't work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're unleashing. I use an example in my preaching that, you know, we're made a certain way to live within God's moral law. We're sinful, so we rebel against that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Without the Spirit of Christ, without the power of the Holy Spirit, we can't even attempt to live a moral life. But the effect of that, I often say, when people start straying into sin, adultery, and all this stuff, I say, please, I beg you, in Jesus' name, don't do this. Don't do this to yourself. Don't do this to your spouse, your family. And I compare it. Do you remember that ad against drugs years ago where they took an egg
oh,
and
yeah.
they said, this is your brain? They dropped it in the frying pan.
Yeah,
and they said, "This is your brain on drugs."
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I use a paper shredder.
60 seconds.
I use a paper shredder, and I take a piece of paper. I say, "This is your emotions," and then I put it through the shredder, and I say, "This is your emotions on sin."
It's gone to pieces. Yeah.
I mean, if you want to absolutely tear yourself to pieces, engage in this kind of sin. I mean, you're not made to do that. You will go crazy. I know people recognize, if they've tried fornication and adultery and all that, you want to drive yourself crazy? Do that.
Right.
That's why God said don't do it. He wants you to be sane and calm.
Right.
And not going crazy and, you know, killing people and killing yourself. And, you know, I know that, you know, various groups say that if they were just accepted, they wouldn't have a high incident of alcoholism and drug addiction and suicide. But if it's the immorality that's disordering you, that's what's causing first the shame and then the alcohol and drug abuse. And,
we're
and
about
sadly,
out of time. Mr. Sheldon, I don't mean to cut you off, but we're almost out of time. In closing, I really appreciate your time today. And Mr. Hawk, I appreciate him joining us today. And hopefully later on I'll be able to let you guys hear what Mr. Ray Stedman had to say and teach us on the sex issue and moral issues. But until next time, be prayerful, be wise, and be adaptable. God bless all of you.
Thank you.
It is. No subject is taboo. If it's brought to the table, you bet we cover it. No more lies, no more deception. You have a right to know. It's bold. It's informative. It's Truth Talk.